Please give a warm welcome to our speaker tonight, Wally, from the Good Old Boys Saturday Club in Portsmouth.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be asked to do this. My name is Wally, and I'm an alcoholic.
Wally.
My sober date is 10-2-23. I'll go ahead and jump right into it. What it was like for me, I started drinking at a really young age, 14 years old. I had two older sisters with boyfriends who liked to show me how to use drugs and drink a lot. So what I would do is I would learn from the older people and take it back to my friends. So I was everybody's favorite middleman because I always had the connections to get the alcohol and the drugs. I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but drugs are a big part of my story as well. But alcohol was the king, as it is with most of us. But so there was some traumatic experiences in my life. The first was when I was 16. I got drunk one night and ended up getting jumped by five other people and put in a hospital and almost died. I was in and out of a coma for probably 2 weeks, but made it through that, and it only got worse from there. I had dropped out of high school probably three or four times in and out. My life turned into a really bad string of alcoholic and drug addiction till I was probably about 19 when my father got sick of it and told me I had to go get a job. So I pulled myself up by the bootstraps and I went and found a trade. But that whole time I was still in addiction and alcoholism. So what I did, I gave my trade 100%. But I was living a double life. And so at night and weekends, I was out in the streets, bars, hotels, partying all night, but I progressed in my trade. Even coming in high and drunk, I still progressed in it. I still climbed. I heard once on a speaker tape that I fell up in life. So in that aspect of my life, my career, I never had a problem with. It was the nightlife and the weekend life that I could not shake. And there was certain drugs that went along with the alcohol that grabbed me in certain points of my life. In my 20s, it was one thing. In my 30s, it was another. And here, this last run that I had, it was 3 years of probably one of the worst drugs that you could be on, and whiskey, just bottom shelf whiskey, really hard. And so instead of the double life, nighttime, weekend, day, it was all starting to meld together. And it was starting to affect my job, and it was showing. It showed in my work, it showed in my ability to pay attention, to complete a task. So I would go through these long stints of, I would be up for 7 days, just all day, all night, working, partying, nonstop, and then I just hit a wall. And I couldn't get out of bed for 3 days, and this was 10-2-23. I've never asked anybody for help in my life. I was the kid that got asked to come back home when dad couldn't work anymore. Since I was 25, I've been helping take care of my folks, and I'm 45 now. So even still doing that, they had no idea of my lifestyle. They had a small inclination of the alcoholism, but no idea of the drug addiction. So back to the 10-2-23, I crawled out of my room on 10/5/23, and I basically crawled from my room to the couch and just looked at him and said, I can't do this anymore. They had absolutely no idea what I was talking about. They just thought I was sick because I didn't come out of my room for 3 days. So it was, I like to say, I was always at home taking care of family, but I was never at home. So me doing that, of course, you know, the sister comes out. I say, I can't do it. I need help. I can't do this on my own because, just like it says in the book, I've tried every which way you could. I tried drinking at home. I tried not drinking at home. I tried switching from beer to liquor, back from liquor to beer, this to that, here to there. Didn't work. So my sister picks the phone up, sees the first number in the for the rehabs, and I get on the phone. Excuse me. So the first question, the first words out of the lady's mouth on the phone was, are you willing to go to any length to get sober? At the time, I didn't know. Sure, yeah, why not? So the next day, I'm on an airplane flying to California. That was the worst airplane ride I've ever had in my life. I didn't sleep the whole time. Me being a big guy, I had half a chair. it was very uncomfortable, and it was the longest flight of my life, honestly. But there was a lot of points that I later found out, somebody called them God shots, that happened to me when I was over there. The first thing was when I landed and I was waiting for the guy to pick me up. You know, when you go to these places, they just give you a phone number, and I'm in California, first time ever. I don't know who's showing up, what they're pulling up in. I'm just standing there with my bag. You know what I mean? Just lost like a puppy. So the guy pulls up, and he is the exact twin of my godfather who had passed away the year before, to the T. So I'm just talking about it. I got chills just saying that. But I never told the guy that. I don't know why. Obviously, I was still in the fog, as they called it over there, you know, coming out of your fog of addiction and alcoholism. So, you know, he takes you to Wendy's or whatever. We get food, and, you know, then I'm in this rehab, and, you know, they let you sleep for 3 days. I was like, this is it. I was doing this at home. I slept for 3 days at home. I said, this is it. But they don't want you doing anything because they think you might, I don't know, pass out and bang your head or something. But so once I first started into the little meetings that they have, and I started seeing the big book coming, you know, they walk you through the first three steps in most rehabs that you go to. But I didn't know that then. But we got to the higher power thing. And I struggled with that. I really did. Because I had no faith whatever. You know, there's one thing they don't teach you as a child is how you deal with grief and loss at 12 years old when you lose your best friend. That's something that you gotta try to live with. And to deal with stuff like that, between that and me almost dying at 16, alcohol was my solution. Alcohol and drugs hid life for me for a long time. So back to the rehab, the God thing. I really struggled with it. You know, when they tell you it could be the door handle or the ceiling fan or what? You know, my relationship was with my higher power was nil. After the stuff I've been through and the stuff that I've seen in my life, how could there be a God? So you know, they give you this notebook when you're in these places, and then, you know, you just not constantly writing in there. And I was really struggling with it. And, you know, they kind of pounded it in you, you know, you gotta have a higher power. It doesn't have to be our Lord and Savior. It doesn't have to be this. You can be whatever you want. I couldn't fathom it. I couldn't wrap my head around it. So I shared this a few weeks back. I was looking in my notebook that I had when I was in rehab. And there's that time where it was probably about a good 2 days where that's all I was writing in my book. Let go, let God, let go, let God, let go, let God, let go, let God. And for some reason, one morning, I actually did have the burning bush experience. I did. And it was a fleeting moment. It probably lasted maybe a minute. It could have been 10 minutes. But I just kept saying it for 2 days, you know, and I have a problem sleeping without a sleep mask, and I didn't have my sleep mask out there. So I would be up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, because I couldn't sleep. And I honestly had the clouds part and something, some aura, something just came over me. I can't even explain it. I mean, I wish I could stay in that state, but it was over in a minute. But for some reason, the thought of alcohol and drugs left my mind at that moment. And I haven't thought about it since. But that same day that happened, the first class that I had with one of the counselors was, he came in there, he had this program out, it, you know, whatever his hour of lesson was gonna be. That got thrown out the window. He saw us in there, there was a bunch of people in there complaining about not getting their family back, this and that. He shut his lesson plan down and gave us his experience, strength, and hope, told us his story, and was pounding on the desk, crying. I mean, from here to here, if you're not here for yourself, then you're not here for the right reason. Leave now, because this is not gonna work for you. That man's statement to this day still stays in my mind. And that is what started me working this program. So there was a few other God shots that happened while I was out there, but that one particular speech that man gave me to say that if you're here to get your family back, or you're here to get your job back, you're here for the wrong reason.
Bing.
Another God shot that happened, the second house that I lived at, they put me in. It was a sober living house. It was my birthday. The numbers on the house were my birthday. So, you know, people say it's happenstance, but you don't, that doesn't just happen. You know, there's no coincidences in AA, I don't believe. So when I got back, I'm going fast here. So when I got back from California, I didn't have to go back to work for another month. So I was going to 2 meetings a day at the cabin. And I heard somebody share, I was looking for a sponsor, and this one guy shared, if you're new to this thing, get yourself a sponsor, get yourself a home group, get yourself a big book, and work these steps. But it was suggested to me from somebody else in the cabin that I go to somebody else and ask him to be my sponsor. And I did that, but then I thought it over overnight, and I called that same guy back, and I said, you know, they tried to do that when I was in California, give you a temporary sponsor before you leave. just so you get some taste of some kind of sponsorship. What that guy did over there was nothing like anything that I've heard anybody do. Not saying it was wrong, but he told me to go read to 164 by myself and then highlight stuff I didn't understand and then come back to him. And from what I found out later, that's that doesn't work. Not for me, anyway. So back to the sponsorship thing. Somebody suggested that I go ask somebody to be my sponsor. And I, you know, no one, I don't know about you, but I don't like being told what to do, no matter in, no matter where I'm at. So I went my own route. And I went with a guy that that I heard share at the end of the meeting the previous night before. And his first question to me was, are you willing to go to any length to get sober? Isn't it funny how some things come back around in AA that will seem to never leave you? But I jumped into this thing full force. Like I said, when I first got back, I was doing two meetings a day for probably 30, maybe 20 some days. But I automatically got a service position. I started chairing meetings, got a home group. I left one home group, got another home group. Now I got two home groups. A GSR for one of my home groups. The only reason I'm saying that is because service is what keeps me sober today. It keeps me accountable to work this program. I don't have a sponsor yet, so I cannot speak on that side of the 12th step, but I can speak on opening meetings, you know, making the coffee, just the small things, putting the chairs away, sticking your hand out, just to see the faces of new people come in that you see want to try this way of life. And that's what I think this is. I don't think it's a program. I think it's a way of life. I went really fast. I'm kind of hitting the wall here. I'm kind of hitting the wall here. I'm sorry. I apologize. It's only, you know, yeah. So, yeah. Oh, that's my story. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Wally. Yeah. Better short than too long, I always say. I'm gonna go ahead and pass this basket around. We do have some time if anyone wants to share on what's been said tonight or if anyone wants to open up discussion.
Jennifer said she would get something.
Jennifer didn't even say a word.
Did Jennifer say she...
Jen, alcoholic.
Hey, Jen.
I love when Steve Vollen tells me to do things. Fantastic. Thank you for sharing your story. When I came in the rooms, I was strongly encouraged to always find the similarities in stories, and I do that. So I really appreciate what you shared. It's been a rough couple weeks, if I'm being honest.
Good.
Probably a rough couple months. And this meeting, you guys have really helped me. Moving in sobriety is not for the weak. Blending a family is not all peaches and cream. But coming here, having you guys to reground me every week with people sharing their stories has helped make each day better. And it's odd that Steve would have thrown me up here like this, because I just shared with Nina how much I have been struggling, and it's very hard for me to say that out loud. My sponsor knows, but my sponsor's also 2,700 miles away. Sorry. Thank you for being a part of my sobriety. I know I didn't share anything profound today, but just being able to come up here and say how hard it is right now is really a big step, because moms are supposed to usually have it together all the time. What I know to do is to open my mouth and say when there's a problem. What I know to do is to go to meetings. What I know to do is to pick up a phone. What I know to do is to pick up the big book. And the truth is, I haven't been doing those things. And that is a scary truth. I am not cured from this disease. I make no pretend idea that I am. I am an alcoholic to my core. And I have to do something different. And so while I was joking, thank you for throwing me under the bus. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Jen. We still have some time, so you don't have to come up here, but we can, you know, it's open to sharing on what we've heard tonight. We can talk about anything as it pertains to the subject, I suppose. We can talk about courage, hope. Yeah, sounds good to me. I'm just going to leave it open.
I'm still uncomfortable in sobriety with silence. Wally, thanks for coming out, man. Yeah, you rocked it, dude. It doesn't matter whether you last the whole time. The first time I was asked to speak, I think I had like 5 months. I got sober in Maryland, and we went to the speaker meeting. I think it was called Great Fact. It was on Wednesdays, I think at 8. And I show up with my sponsor. The speaker doesn't show up, which is funny because now I'm the speaker coordinator, and I'm like not a great speaker coordinator, but they didn't show up. So deer in headlights, you know, they asked me to speak, and I don't even remember what I said. So if you can remember what you said, you probably could. But I related to a lot of what you shared, man. I had a Jekyll and Hyde. I had a career that I was, I didn't want them to know my high risk behavior when I was not at work. I had it kind of like, you know, I'd do my job, and then after I kind of would do whatever I wanted to do. I started using early on. I was 12 when I had my first mood altering spiritual experience. And I chased that for as long as I could. And also I like that Jen shared moving in sobriety. This is my second move in sobriety, and probably the second of many because of my career. And the first time, I had about a year of sobriety, and I got sent to Florida. So Florida, I like Florida. They suggested that I get a sponsor and a home group as soon as possible. And Dave, with a year of sobriety, got there. I went to my first meeting, and there was like, I don't know, three or four people there. I was like, hey, sucks in Florida. It's not going to work out. I was like distraught. And then I went out to sea, so I did not do what they told me to do. And the first time I got back, the desire to drink was back. What had happened is I relied heavily on meetings. I wasn't used to not being able to go to meetings. I don't think my relationship with my higher power was as strong as I thought until it was put to the test. So I do believe in those God shots, and I believe that my higher power puts me in positions to grow. And it says in our book that unfortunately or fortunately, pain is a touchstone of growth. So I had to experience some pain in order to realize that there are some holes in my program that I need to look at. So instead of taking a drink after that, there was a guy that I had heard share at a meeting similar to what you said. And I was like, man, I'm going to call this guy up. He became my sponsor. And slowly but surely, when I started to do what was suggested, when I started to work the program that worked for me in the very beginning, after that move in sobriety, you know, things were fine. I mean, like Jen shared, like, I don't know if anything's going to be peaches and cream. We used to call it like rainbows and butterflies. You know, the pink cloud has worn off, although there are days and there are moments where it's sort of like a pinch me moment. I'm sitting back and I'm like, man, how does it get this good? From what I felt like before to what it's like now. And I want to hold on to that feeling. Like when I'm feeling, you know, on the beam and sort of, I guess, I don't know the word to call it other than spiritual, it feels good, man. But I'll do the things that I need to do. What happens is I'll start feeling pretty good, and then maybe I'll dip down a little bit and then kind of pick it back up. You know, it's still, you know, I got to do the work every day. I can't stay sober on yesterday's sobriety. And resting on my laurels is like the theme of this. What year am I in? The theme of like 3.5 to 4 years of sobriety. Even with speaker coordinating, man. Like, just call the people up. You know, I end up resting on my laurels and I have no one to blame but myself. It's like they used to ask me early on, how soon do you want to get well? And I remember looking at my first sponsor like, right away, dude. You know, I'd like to get well. But today, that's a thing. How soon do I want to get well? How soon do I want to accept the situation exactly the way that it is? And how soon do I want to actually put my inventory on paper instead of doing it in my head and thinking that that's sufficient? How soon do I want to admit that I was wrong and look at what I need to do to make it right? That's, you know, what I think. I don't know if I have the control to just feel great all the time, but yeah, how soon do I want to get well? And I haven't been, I've been resting in it a little bit. Forgot where I was going with that, but this next time, well, this second move in sobriety, I came to Virginia. This was like the closest meeting to my apartment at the time. So I went here and made it my home group. I think shortly after that, I was still undecided. I was like, I got to keep my options open. But I made my home group, and then I found my sponsor. I found my sponsor here, and you can have multiple home groups. You can do that. So I got a sponsor, and what do you know? I haven't had the desire to drink after this move in sobriety. And what's hilarious is I got a sponsor that, you know, didn't treat me like a dude with 3 years of sobriety, which, man, I needed that. I needed to get back to basics. And it's just funny how God works, my higher power works. He puts me exactly where I'm supposed to be at the time that I'm supposed to be there. Now, if I was supposed to be somewhere else, I'd be there. And I try to tell myself that because, you know, early on, I think I had like 2 months of sobriety, and my sponsor had to tell me, like, dude, you know, you're trying to have 2 years sobriety in 2 months. You know, I have this thing in me that wants to feel good all the time. It's no wonder why I like drugs and alcohol. But I forgot what I was saying there. I'm kind of rambling. But yeah, the goal today is to try to be content where my feet are, and just to trust that even if things maybe aren't okay now, you know, they will be okay in the future. As long as I don't pick up a drink or a drug one day at a time, it's going to be fine. Like, my small experience has shown that the stuff that was like earth-shattering, I look back and I don't even remember those moments. It's like funny to think about. My second sponsor, and I'll leave with this, He used to tell me that when something was bothering me, to literally say in my head, I won't use the swear word, but you know, this isn't a big deal. Like, I literally had to just tell myself that. And wouldn't you know that, like, I'm still taking myself too seriously, and I had to just come to terms with, like, it's not that big of a deal, you know? And as long as I don't pick up a drink or a drug, the release may not come the next day or the next day after that, but it will come. And there's, like you said, this is a way of life. I haven't found so far something that I was dealing with in life that the book and the steps and talking with you guys hasn't helped me to get through. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, David.
My name is Greg, and I'm an alcoholic and an addict.
Hello, Greg.
Hey, Greg.
Hello, everyone. So I wanted to share something that happened to me this past summer. We have all these expressions in AA, these little platitudes, and we say them a lot. And myself, I know that sometimes you get so used to hearing them that, you know. But one of the things that we say is you should always share what's on your mind or in your heart at meetings, because you never know who needs to hear that day, right? And so I had a powerful example of that. In October, I went to New York for a while, and my sponsor lives in New York. And so I always spend a day with him when I'm in New York. And I have been in New York quite a bit over the last couple of years because my mother was dying. So I went and spent a day with my sponsor, and we had dinner, and he said, I have a surprise for you. I said, oh, great. He had invited somebody else that I hadn't seen in 30 years that was still sober from the program, that was there when I first got sober. And the first thing he said to me is, he said, you bastard, he said, you still have a full head of hair. he being of the bald persuasion. But anyway, I related a story to him. I said, you know, when I got sober, I went to jail. And after I got out of jail that morning, I went straight to work, where I had a coworker who had gotten sober, and he would say to me, not proselytizing, but he said, oh, you know, I'm going to AA now, and things are really good. And I was like, yeah, okay, great. You know, he's like, if you ever want. So that morning I went to him and I said, listen, I need help. I can't do this anymore. So he said to me, it was a Wednesday, right? So he said to me, I have something to do tonight. He said, so I can't go to a meeting with you. He said, but I want you to go to a meeting at the hospital, because the hospital had a rehab on the top floor. And they had a meeting every day at the hospital. We called them rehab meetings as opposed to not rehab meetings. He said, and I'll meet you Thursday night at the church. And that ended up being my home group and my first commitment. But anyway, back to Wednesday night. He said, go to the hospital, just go tonight. So I went to the hospital and they had the rehab meeting. And the people at the rehab are forced to be there. And so, like, a lot of them didn't want to be there, and so they were, like, disruptive, they weren't paying attention, and I was just sitting there listening to it, and I was like, I don't know, man, I don't think that this is for me, you know? I was like, I don't know. And this was back when they still had cigarette breaks at AA meetings, so I remember them saying, they said, oh, we're going to go for 45 minutes, then we'll have a 15-minute cigarette break, we'll come back for a half hour. That's how they used to do it. So I was like, all right. When we had the cigarette break, I'll just leave because I'm too embarrassed to get up and walk out in the middle of the meeting. So the cigarette break came and everybody got up and walked out. And as I walked out into the hallway, I ran into this guy that I used to party with. And he turned around and said, hey, good to see you. Shook my hand. He said, man, I'm doing so great with this stuff. Things are better. My job, things are better. And I said to him, really? I said, this? He said, yeah, yeah. He said, I'm just doing great. So I went back for the second half of the meeting, and that was my first meeting. And the next night I went to what would become my home group. But anyway, when I saw him in October, I told him that story that I just told you. And he said to me, oh, wow. He said, I don't remember that at all. And so the point was, it was incredibly insignificant for him, and it meant everything to me. So thanks for letting me share.
My name is Steve Rocha, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Steve. Wally, thank you for coming out. It takes a tremendous amount of courage. For anybody who hasn't done this before, it's a lot of courage to stand up here and tell your story to a bunch of strangers and to tell the truth. So thank you very much. First time I did it, I was about 4 months sober in Chicago. At the Sunday morning, there was a breakfast meeting in the bar next door. And so when we got done with breakfast, they shuffled us to the back of the restaurant. We ended up in the bar. So the first time I gave a talk was in the back of a bar on a Sunday morning. And it smelled like the bar on Sunday morning. And I didn't have any real AA experience. I'd just been coming to meetings and not drinking. So I just sat up there and cried for most of the time that I was up there, which was about as long. I just babbled and whatnot. So, but the experience, because we see people come up here, man, and they're just so smooth and graceful, like swans, you know, because they've been doing it for a long time. And they know it's like sponsors. Some guys just have the right answers all the time because they sponsor a lot of guys. So everything that we do in Alcoholics, it's all about repetition, right? You just got to do this long enough. And the first time you were talking about being of service, the first assembly I went with Vernon and his old, like, I guess he was wife number two. I don't know how many numbers he's got, but he had, and they took me to the assembly. And man, I just fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous at the state assembly. And I'm very grateful that my family made the sacrifices to allow me to participate in a lot of that service stuff. Because most married guys with young kids don't get to do all that. But because I was such a knucklehead and my wife didn't want me around, she would just say, go. So I got to, I was allowed to participate in a lot of stuff. And so, getting sober and staying sober, what I've learned over the years, and I've had this occasion twice in my sobriety where I went on a dry drunk. The problem with having gone through the steps and having a spiritual awakening and being of service and sponsoring people and all that, I'm still susceptible to that. And I don't realize it when it's happening. I just don't see it. I'm the only one that doesn't see it. Everybody else sees it. But because I fall into the trap to thinking that the more I do in AA means the more sober I am. And I fell into the service trap that I was involved at the district, I was involved at the intergroup, and I was on this committee and that committee, da, 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 and I was doing a lot of stuff, but I wasn't working the steps. That's where I fell down on my program. And so as my sobriety began to wane, the more I would exert myself to do, and you know, what Dave was talking about, resting on my laurels, I gotta have some laurels to rest on, right? The past accomplishments. And so if I don't have any laurels to rest on, it just kind of, the bottom falls out. And so in my case, I went on a dry drunk twice, and the first time, I fired my sponsor and I cut all my guys loose. I was sponsoring maybe 6-7 guys, and I called them up and said, "Man, I'm not going to ask you to do something I'm not doing anymore. So you need to go find another sponsor." And in probably about within a month or two, I was ready to drink again. I was going to maybe one meeting a week, if that, and I was ready to drink again. And I went to a meeting and I told this guy about what's going on, and I said, "Man, I'm getting ready to move out of my house." He's like, "You meet with your wife and kids?" I was like, "Yeah." He said, "Why?" I was like, "Man, I don't know. It just seems like the right thing to do." Because what I understand now is I was getting ready to drink again, and I didn't want to put my family through that anymore. The problem, so before I got to that stage on both occasions, the second time, I wasn't going to move out. I was going to sink my boat in the Chesapeake Bay and just drown myself. But I wanted to figure out how to tie the anchor line around my ankle so my wife could get the insurance money. Because if it looks like a suicide, she won't get the money, right? So there you go. I love my wife enough that I want her to get the money, but I don't want to save myself. And so what I learned before I got to that end stage was, in my decline in sobriety, I went from AA member to AA show off to just AA taker again. When I was new to sobriety, I was a taker because I had nothing to give you guys. I had nothing to share. I had no message of hope. And so when I began that decline again, I quit giving back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm only coming here and I'm only taking what you give me, but I'm not giving anything back. And so for me, it seems that the relationship that I've developed with the God of my understanding began to wane the closer I got to being an AA taker. That just means I'm just more disconnected from God. And so I don't see the sunlight of the, you know, like the book says, I lose the sunlight of the spirit and I'm just completely disconnected. The insanity returns, right? And then I'm ready to drink again. And so what I had to do was I had to go back to basics. Both times that happened to me is I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I got another sponsor. And in my case, I went back to the previous sponsor. I got a home group and I got a coffee commitment. That seems to me that no matter what stage I am, no matter how many years I've been sober, that when the bottom falls out, if I go back to basics And if God can grace me with enough humility to just come back and say, man, I need some help, that is here. But I insulate myself because I hide behind how long I've been sober or my laurels or whatever, right? And I don't let, I don't allow God to come back into my life, and I don't allow you to help me. You guys have always been here every freaking time I needed some help. But I gotta be humble enough, and I gotta be in enough pain that I'm ready to ask for some help. Thank you.
Thanks,
Dan. Oh, you know, pass the mic to Mike. Get that. I'm gonna pass the mic to Mike.
Hey! Confession time. So, hey, I'm Mike, I'm an alcoholic. Resting on your laurels. Thanks, wife, for coming out and doing the talk, man. I think I did mine probably right around that same timeline of sobriety. Like we were talking earlier before the meeting, I got about 23 months now. First time I did it was in a rehab with the Navy. So you want to talk about a bunch of Navy rehab guys that were forced to be there and didn't want to hear half the shit I had to say. Trust me, man. I know what that feels like. But I'm pretty sure none of it meant anything. It was really more of a confession for me, right? Mm-hmm. Completely ridiculous. Awful bad. I've done it a couple times since then. It was actually a little bit better each time, but never easy by any stretch. Never easy by any stretch. Like we were talking before the meeting about just getting to those moments and getting to that point of how life gets you here. Wally said, being here for yourself is the reason. Somebody also said to me, I think earlier tonight, about narcissism, which I think my rebuttal to that was, I think it'd be the most misused term in the last decade, in my opinion. Self-centered to the extreme, I can buy into. Narcissism, I'm not so sure, but clearly I got here by my own making. Trying to do the right things, finding God, being humble, trying to get to a point to straighten those things out. Time takes time. There ain't a timeline to it, from what I found. Heard some guys tonight say some pretty cool shit about stuff. I'm sorry, shit, church. Say some pretty cool stuff about, yeah, I wanted to run through those steps and I wanted to run through the wall and get it all done as quick as I possibly can. It wasn't my experience, or hasn't been my experience anyway. My experience has probably been more the one of stumble, fall, fight it. Interestingly enough, that probably summarizes about the first 45 years of my life. Learning how to live sober, that's been about where I've been for the last good little while. Had some great advice, some great skill sets, had some great experience, some strength, and some hope. Hell, they handed me a rule book. Before then, rules were just strong suggestions that I completely ignored for probably the rest of my life. Even with that rule book, I still try to find my own way. Letting go and letting God. You know, what was it, the euphemisms and all these nice little sayings that you keep seeing? There's five of them back there. Every time I think and look at those, especially standing up here, I start to think, man, I got that one. Man, I think I, oh shit, think. Yeah, that's probably not the right way to go. Anyway, it's just been a journey, right? And I hate that word too, because I think that's another really misused phrase with reality TV these days. But it's been a process, learning how to live sober. Being honest, learning from you guys, trying to pass that along, what little piece I could get. It's good stuff. It's been a great group. It's been an interesting couple of years, I know that. Looking forward to see what comes next. But I can say that, you know, for a long time, I told Wally before the meeting, met these guys out at the cabin. Cabin saved my life, by the way, because, man, that first 6 months of freaking sobriety was awful. By 10:30 every morning, I was ready to kill somebody at work. And just so happened, I was right around the corner from the cabin. And the cabin's a really great place if you've never been. It's got just enough crazy in it that makes you feel pretty okay. And it doesn't, and like, anybody who's known me, man, like, I was really down in the bottom end of this thing coming out of it after 30 some odd years of drinking. But just enough crazy in it, man, to make you feel all right. So I would go catch a meeting midday out there. And man, just that little bit of crazy would get me back. I'm like, Jesus, man, this is freaking great. And but I always said, especially at the first couple of months of going to do it, I didn't walk out feeling better about myself, or feeling superior. That was a new take in my life, right? That wasn't the case. I felt okay. I felt like it's okay to be crazy, which is awesome, man. I don't know about you guys, but being around a group of people that when you tell yourself and you tell everybody just openly you're nuts, that's the response. Like, right? Like, how freaking great is that? Because really, most of my drinking career was running from that kind of stuff, right? Being able to say things and tell people just how nuts and crazy I am, because I do those same dumb things, man. I look for ways to sabotage myself and others. Unfortunately for me, it's always about me first, right? So I'm looking to sabotage myself, thinking I'm not, and I can't see it. Can't see it 95% of the time. So it's been a great place for me. It's a great home group. It's a different experience. Never had six speakers in a night. That's about all I got. Thanks for the share. Thanks. Thanks.